Senate majority will pass
a law prohibiting it, and we will take them to court challenging it.
Yet another stand for New York and sending a message to the nation.
Welcome to this week's edition of New York Now. I'm Casey Seiler of the Times Union in for Dan Clark. We saw the first steps toward a broader shutdown in New York this week as COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations continue to rise. And that's without knowing how much of a surge we'll see from Thanksgiving. Governor Andrew Cuomo said again this week he thinks things will likely get worse over the next month.
My opinion, personal opinion, is that you're going to see the increase continue all through the holidays. You'll see it continue through January 2nd, and then the lag for the testing hospitalization, which takes you to about mid-January.
And plenty more happened this week. Democrats grew their ranks again in the state Senate, and now they're getting ready for the new year. With me in the studio to break it down, and it's so good to be with you in person,
right,
are my Capitol colleagues, Karen DeWitt, Capitol Bureau Chief of New York State Public Radio, and John Campbell, State Team Editor of the USA Today Network. It's great to see you guys.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Thanks for having me.
Indeed. All right, well, let's get to it. It's great to see you. It's terrible to hear the news, of course, about New York's positivity rates, which continue to go up. On the state website on Thursday night, there were more than 24 microclusters all across the state that were identified. The state's positivity rate on Thursday hovered just under 5% on 200,000 tests that were done.
Yeah, it makes you wonder how long can the governor's microcluster approach work. I mean, he doesn't want to shut down the state. Nobody wants a shutdown. And he was hoping, as the virus surged again, to contain it by having these yellow, orange, and red zones with corresponding restrictions. But it's starting to get more that it's statewide. I mean, the statewide numbers, even without the microclusters, were above 4%. And 4%, I think, was the limit for orange zone for everybody in the previous iteration of this. So I think that, you know, it was a good try, but right now it seems like we're headed for more economic shutdowns. I just don't see how we get around it.
Yeah, and right now we're in this kind of limbo zone between the previous rules for these red, orange, yellow zones that come with more COVID restrictions and these new rules that the governor said he's going to roll out, which previously it was based only on test positivity. You know, if you had 4% of your tests come back positive in a particular geographic area, you'd be entered into an orange zone, for example. Now he says he's going to add hospitalization rates, death rates, case rates, a lot of different new metrics to determine these. But he said he wants to wait until 7 to 10 days after Thanksgiving to see what that kind of spike, post-Thanksgiving spike is, to determine the metric level. So right now we're in this kind of limbo zone where we don't know how a zone is being determined, and they haven't rolled out any new zones in the last few days.
The other problem is a lot of the spread now is coming from private gatherings at homes. You know, over Thanksgiving, and it just seemed anecdotally, nearly everyone I knew did limit in some way their gatherings, but people are still gathering. They probably will for the holidays. And that's hard to regulate, as we saw over Thanksgiving. The county sheriffs who would be in charge of it, they were not going to go to people's homes and, you know, count numbers around the table, which I personally kind of find a relief that the police aren't that involved in people's lives. But, you know, I don't know how much more that you can shut down. Indoor dining is limited. There's no large gatherings. People don't go to movies. So it's really hard to regulate it anymore unless you convince people that they should just stay home voluntarily, not have anybody over for any of the winter holidays. And I don't know if that's going to happen.
Well, so kind of to use Albany County, where I think we all reside, mm-hmm. as an example, Albany County was right on the cusp of being designated at the very least a yellow zone, perhaps even going straight to orange zone positivity. Now, County Executive Dan McCoy noted that there was one day when we actually dipped just a mm-hmm. hair below the positivity rate that would kick off yellow zone designation. But now, essentially, the county is still waiting, and I think we're talking 5 days after the governor said that the new metrics that you were referring to, John, were going to be rolled out. We're still waiting, you know, and we are now talking, I guess, about 9 days after Thanksgiving, 8 days.
Yeah, and you know, it goes to show the contrast from the approach in March and April when it was a uniform statewide shutdown, essentially, the New York State on pause order, which ended non-essential gatherings and closed non-essential businesses. And that was done in part because of the simplicity of it. You know, it applied evenly statewide. You couldn't go between regions to say if you wanted to go to a restaurant one area, you couldn't do that because it was closed across the state. Now, you know, the governor says the micro-cluster approach, which is way more targeted, is because the state has more data now. You know, mm-hmm. the state does test 175,000 people plus a day, which is an enormous amount for the state the size of New York. So, you know, it's at what point, when you have 20-something micro-clusters, I mean, at what point are they clusters, and at what point is it just a statewide spread? I mean, it's something that the governor has to grapple with.
Yeah, and if you really want to go to a restaurant, you just go out the red or orange zone and go to the restaurant. The other thing they've learned is that schools don't spread the virus as badly as they thought. So there's also the attempt to keep schools open, even if these numbers go up.
So this seems like a very good time to talk about. This is the first roundtable we've had in 2 weeks. And of course, on Thanksgiving Eve, I believe it was, the U.S. Supreme Court issued a decision in a case that was brought by an ultra-Orthodox, representatives of an ultra-Orthodox community and the Brooklyn Catholic Diocese that slapped down Governor Cuomo's micro-cluster restrictions on how many people can attend a religious gathering inside one of these red zones.
Yeah, that's right. But, you know, I've noticed that a lot of churches and synagogues, they're self-limiting anyway. They haven't suddenly opened their doors and let everybody in. So a lot of them are voluntarily following the rules. So I'm not sure how much of an effect that really has. But then you do have the ultra-Orthodox Jewish groups who secretly held a wedding with thousands of people, and it just seems like now they don't have the power to control that, even though they weren't doing a good job anyway when they thought the law was on their side.
And the Supreme Court ruling was specific to religious organizations in red and orange zones. In red zones, they were limited to no more than 10 people, or 25% capacity. In orange zones, they were limited to 25 people or 33% capacity. The Supreme Court stepped in and said, nah, you can't do those person limits. You can't do the 10 people and the 25 mm-hmm. people. The percentage capacity limits still seem to be in effect. And you know, it also goes to show the governor has widespread authority here in the pandemic. The legislature passed a law that allows him to issue all sorts of executive orders, and he's used that enormously so.
Right.
But the one area where the courts have kind of slapped him down is the religious gatherings. You know, when he's tried to put further restrictions mm-hmm. on religious gatherings than restaurants, for example. And that's the one area where he hasn't been successful in court.
Well, separation of church and state, right? That's sort of ingrained in
protected in the Constitution.
Yes, exactly. So.
So, okay, it's the worst of times. Get us a little bit closer to hopefully something approaching the best of times, of course, on the horizon, we have the rollout of vaccines, specifically two of them that appear to be just on the verge of FDA approval, perhaps, and then, of course, potentially, likely, state approval as well, because the governor says he's going to look at the FDA approval process, which he has cast into doubt, I think it's fair to say. Mm-hmm. The governor on Thursday basically showed off kind of a prototype of a vaccine kit that is going to be rolled out. Pfizer, a New York company, will put its vaccines into vials provided by Corning Glass, another New York company, and it will be shipped out. 170, I believe, doses that will go out in the next couple of weeks.
170,000.
170,000, yes, thank you. Yeah, 170 wouldn't get you too far.
170,000 won't get you too far
That's
either.
That's true, too.
You know, when you've got 19 million people in New York. What we did learn from the governor this week is that for that initial shipment of 170,000 vaccine doses from Pfizer, they intend on using that almost exclusively, if not entirely exclusively, for nursing homes and nursing home residents and nursing home staff. And that's significant in part because the governor has faced a lot of criticism for his handling of COVID-19 in nursing homes at the beginning of the pandemic. Now, he pushes back very forcefully and has defended his handling, but, you know, there was this controversial March order, you know, where patients were sent back to nursing homes. It's been well covered at this point.
And they still have withheld some information. We still
Absolutely.
Don't know how many nursing home residents went to the hospital and died. And the state health commissioner, Dr. Howard Zucker, many, many months later keeps saying, well, we're still looking for that data. We just haven't found all the numbers of that, and we can't tell you about that. So yeah, I think that you're right. I hadn't really thought about that the nursing homes are a priority for that reason. And it's good because they're the most vulnerable people. But I was a little surprised that there wasn't more emphasis on the frontline workers in the ICUs, in the emergency rooms, the healthcare workers working with COVID patients, that they wouldn't have equal weight. And it seems like the nursing homes are going to have slightly higher priority.
Yeah, I mean, in the state's vaccination plan, the draft plan that they put out in October, that first priority was for highly vulnerable populations like nursing homes and frontline healthcare workers. But when your first shipment's only 170,000 doses, you have to further prioritize. Yeah. That said, the Greater New York Hospital Association, they did put out a statement saying, we're okay with this. We understand. They're also a close ally of Governor Andrew Cuomo.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
First Pfizer doses, then Moderna, once again, pending FDA approval, will be coming in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and we'll have several tranches of shipments over the course of December. The governor said they weren't entirely sure how many they'll get from Moderna, how many they'll get from Pfizer before the end of the month, but they do anticipate a second shipment of 170,000 from Pfizer for that second dose. You have to have two different doses of
this
vaccine.
Right. Yeah.
They anticipate that 2 weeks later. They anticipate the Moderna first shipment 2 weeks after December 15th.
But it's going to take a long time for the critical mass of 75% to 85% of people to be vaccinated. It shows you how long it's going to be. And, there's still a lot of questions about the distribution plan. As far as I know, it's still the chain pharmacies, like CVS and Walgreens, which is great. They do a good job. But this fall, I was pretty diligent about getting my flu shot, and it was a little disruptive. You couldn't always find the right flu shot at the right pharmacy. And you could just tell that the people, at least at CVS, were really stressed. Yeah. So I wonder about how, are they going to be able to handle all this? I mean, it doesn't sound like there's going to be some public tent somewhere where everybody goes and it's, a state-administered vaccine.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have seen, in some areas, localities are opening up big areas like arenas, like the Times Union Center. Times Union has reported about how the Times Union Center in Albany might be a vaccine center.
That's where I got my H1N1 shot, and my son got his H1N1 shot back in, I guess it was 2009.
Yeah, I think they're going to have to do that. They just can't rely on the chain pharmacies.
No.
It's too much for these pharmacists are stressed as it is.
Now let's turn to the year ahead and lowly politics. Mm-hmm. The State Democratic Conference has welcomed a 43rd member, John Manion, out in central New York.
That's right, the old DeFrancisco seat. We should imagine John DeFrancisco was a frequent guest on this show.
It's
who
been
retired.
Held by Republicans for decades, I think, right?
Probably a century.
Yeah, it's remarkable, and it's a sign that they now have. Of course, you never want a bare majority. I guess it's not good to have a bare supermajority, if you're trying to overturn a veto, because if the governor peels, at least one person off, he can upset the apple cart. But it is a remarkable accomplishment for the Senate Democrats, who on election night and perhaps even election day might have had worries about whether they were actually going to get to that supermajority. But as the weeks went by, I mean, the dominoes continue to fall.
That's right. Although we did have a brief time when the Republican leaders were claiming victory and said that they were going to have 27 to 28 seats because the initial voting was the in-person voting, which this year more Republicans voted in person and more Democrats voted absentee. So as the absentee ballots counted up over the last few weeks, the Democrats just kept gaining and gaining, although the Republicans did flip one seat, Jen Metzger's seat in the Hudson Valley. Mike Martucci won that seat. But the Republicans, they're down to 20 seats, which is what they came into this election because some members had retired and hadn't even bothered to finish up the year. So the Democrats have strong majority, and it does change the balance of power because Governor Cuomo and all governors in New York have a ton of power when it comes to the budget. And this way, the legislature, if they disagree with something, both houses of the legislature could override any veto that he had of their legislation. Although I don't see that happening this year.
Yeah, and you know, it's absolutely remarkable to look at just over the course of two election cycles how the makeup of the state Senate has changed. I mean, it was in Republican hands for most of the prior century. And you know, now it has flipped from a Republican majority to a Democratic supermajority in two election cycles. I mean, that is a radical change. And it's also, you know, with district maps that were drawn by Republicans. And now you have a situation where the Democrats have a supermajority. That gives them essentially the final say on redistricting in 2022 for the next decade going forward. It is really important.
Yeah, especially with the Republican enrollment dropping. And now if the Democrats draw the districts to suit them, or even if they just, as they promise to do them fairly, they're still going to have quite an advantage. It's really hard for the Republicans to get out of this, yeah, for the next 10 years, if not more. It's really a big sea change. But, you know, the Senate was pretty closely divided between Democrats and Republicans. Remember the era of the independent Democratic conference where some Democrats sided with the Republicans, where the Democrats actually did have the majority? But I think the Republicans were at least hoping it would be really close for a long time.
Yeah.
That there wouldn't be this super majority that would just kind of, you know, give them no influence whatsoever.
So I want to dive for a little bit into the question of redistricting. Mm-hmm. There is, of course, a redistricting commission that was set up to look at this. That appears to be, as good government groups predicted, deadlocked over partisan issues. And also now the governor's agencies have not even provided that commission with the funding it needs to basically hire up staff to do its work.
Yeah, I have to admit, I was late to covering this issue. I don't know why I was dragging my feet on redistricting, maybe because it's so esoteric.
It's a natural response
right.
to redistricting.
But I decided this week that I would, you know, virtually attend their meeting. And they met for about 22 minutes, and all they talked about was how the governor hadn't given them funding yet, and they seemed to be confused as to what they should do. Should they be bothering the governor's Division of Budget or the Department of State, and why there wasn't any money? And they said, I guess we'll write a letter. And so then I did, you know, some Googling, as any diligent reporter does, right, the easy way, and I found an article by one of your reporters, Chris Bragg, back in September, where they were saying, we don't have any money, we better write a letter. So I thought, well, they aren't really going very far, are they?
Letter, that'll do it.
Yes, yeah, I know, right?
That'll do it.
So it shows that I don't know why the governor's withholding the money for the legislature, because it was approved in the budget that they're supposed to have money to hire staff. And here we are. I mean, it's still early in the process. It's the end of 2020, but it just seems like he's trying to mess with them a little bit.
Well, and listen, money is difficult everywhere right now for New York State, and I wouldn't be surprised if that had something to do with it,
because
the state is facing a multi-billion dollar deficit. That said, it was approved, and it's important. It's something that needs to happen. Now, whether it can or will happen with this current constitutionally approved setup, it's a new setup for this redistricting commission that was approved by a constitutional amendment.
That's right.
You know, it looks pretty gridlocked right now.
Yeah. Well, that's because there's 5 Republicans and 5 Democrats on it. Right.
What'd you expect to happen?
Yeah. So they that was the other issue that they had. They were unable to decide on who should lead the group. So, yeah.
Based on the evidence of another Chris Bragg story, the governor has not had a hard time doing his own hiring of speechwriters within the executive chamber. But
that's right. When they can find money, they can.
Yes.
They'll do it.
So let us turn to Congress, where, unlike the supermajority races, counts are continuing in the Central New York race between Claudia Tenney and Anthony Brindisi. That is now before the court. It looks like, based on which story you read on which day, either Tenney is up by a dozen votes or Brindisi is up by a dozen votes. But it's clear that there are roughly 800 disputed ballots that are going to turn the day.
And then at some point they found 55 ballots that they forgot to count. Yeah, I mean, that district is very closely divided. Claudia Tenney had the district. She is a big Trump supporter. She has a lot of the Trump base. She lost it to Democrat Anthony Brindisi. And it just seems like they're going to have to do a complete recount, to be fair, because it is going to be hard to tell who won if it's down to that few votes.
There's multiple counties involved with multiple different counts, and you know, all the quality control varied from county to county. And when you're talking about a dozen votes, I mean, every single vote counts.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I thought it was kind of striking. On Thursday, the State Board of Elections certified elections, except for the 22nd district, which is, you know, it's one, it is going to have a significant impact on the Democrats' majority in the House. And it is, I mean, listen, it is a difficult, the system works pretty well unless you're down to a dozen votes that, mm-hmm. you know, this one, a judge can dispute this one, a judge can toss this one, and then you're into really difficult territory there. Well, it's tough.
We did have the state Senate race that went into, I think, February, so maybe this one will go several more
weeks. That Cecilia Kacik back in?
That's right.
That was about, eight years ago, I guess, and that really came down to maybe something like 18.
Yeah, 18,
votes,
yeah.
8 years or a lifetime ago?
I know, it's really
several lifetimes ago.
No, I know, it seems that way, doesn't it?
In the North Country, Elise Stefanik, another, like Claudia Tenney, huge supporter of the president, who has become even more so a supporter of the president, did an interview with Newsmax earlier this week, where she, after several weeks of not answering questions, including from the Times Union about whether or not she was backing President Trump's efforts to, you know, to stall the approval of the presidential election count, said, "Oh no, she was completely on board with efforts to count every legal vote." And this was just a couple of hours before, in Georgia, an election official there came out and gave a very emotional speech where he said, "This has got to stop. People's lives are being threatened."
Well, unlike Claudia Tenney, Elise Stefanik won her race pretty decisively, and she won with the Trump base. And many people who support Trump still believe that there's a question about who won. And I think that she just doesn't want to offend them. But it does seem kind of strange. And Newsmax, that's to the right of Fox News, but it's becoming, you know, more of a prevalent format for people who are disputing the results of the election.
And you know, it's worth looking at Elise Stefanik's district. She had a district that in 2016, several counties in her district flipped from Obama in 2012 to Trump in 2016. Almost all of them held, except for Essex County in 2020 for Trump. So there's no doubt that there's been a shift rightward in her district. And I don't think it's coincidence that, you know, you have seen her over the last 4 years really embrace the president, his philosophies, and, you know, his message to the American people.
Yeah, and initially she was not a Trump supporter. But the question is, though, where does she go from here? If Trump doesn't have a future, you know, how does she channel that into, you know, somewhere else? But maybe he does. I mean, you know, he might be running in 2024, so she may be able to, like,
Grover Cleveland.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of members of the New York State congressional delegation who are stepping out on the national stage, Sean Patrick Maloney is going to have a leadership role in the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee.
That's right, the first LGBTQ person to have that. But it's not going to be an easy job because the House Democrats lost seats in this election cycle when Democrats did really well. In the midterms with the Democratic president, Biden, it's going to be tough to hold on to the seats that they do have. So he's got a kind of a big job cut out for him. They have to figure out why they did lose. I think they lost 9 seats. It might be 10. We don't know about the Tenney-Brindisi race. And I think there's one other that's undecided somewhere in the Midwest.
John, amid pandemic madness and election tumult, please bring us home with the subject of surpassing normalness. Tolls going up.
Well, for the first time since 2010, the New York State Thruway is going to, they're increasing tolls on the 570-mile superhighway system. Say that 5 times fast. You know, you're going to see a 30% toll increase starting January 1st, which is a lot. But consider this, it's only for people who pay what used to be known as cash tolls and now are tolls by mail. Because last month the entire thruway switched to a cashless tolling system where you either have your EasyPass billed or you get a bill sent to your house. The people who are getting a bill sent to their house, they're going to have to pay 30% more on tolls plus a $2 surcharge on every monthly bill. And that's pretty significant. Part of that is to try to push more people into EasyPass. So the Thruway Authority doesn't have to mail bills. That comes with a cost. That comes with a lag when they get the money. So they're trying to force as many people into Easy Pass as they can. If you get an Easy Pass, your tolls stay flat.
Yeah, that went over with the very little public opposition. I think between the pandemic and the elections, they were able to kind of slip that through. We saw a couple of senators, Jim Todisco, Republican of Schenectady, David Carlucci of the Hudson Valley, whose district spans the Mario M. Cuomo Bridge, where there's tolls there. But otherwise, you didn't really hear that much about, you know, any pushback from that. So they've kind of slipped that through, yeah. I think, successfully.
Well, and the Cuomo Bridge toll is going up as well, too.
Yeah. Yes, in 2021, 22, right, yeah.
All right, well, that's where we're going to have to leave it. Thanks very much to Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio and John Campbell of the USA Today Network. I mean it when I say it is great to see you guys, albeit socially distanced.
Right.
Well, that's it. We'll catch you back here next week. But until then, visit our website for daily coverage. That's nynow.org. Head there every day for updates from the state capitol and around the state. And follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We are at nynow_PBS. But until then, thanks for watching this week's New York Now. I'm Casey Seiler of the Times Union. Have a great week. Stay safe and be well.